Did you know that collagen makes up 30% of the protein in your body? It's the substance that gives structure, support, and strength to your skin, muscles, bones, and connective tissues. Collagen is what keeps our skin firm and youthful, preventing it from sagging. It also supplies amino acids that are crucial for building healthy hair and protecting hair follicles. The collagen supplement that I use and recommend to my patients is Revive by Bright Core Nutrition. Revive combines five types of collagen with hyaluronic acid and biotin to heal and nourish your skin, hair, and nails. Studies show that collagen also helps relieve joint inflammation and pain. If you're looking to heal your body from the inside out and reverse some effects of aging, Revive could be your answer. For more information and to order, visit mybrightcore.com/Hoffman. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman or call 888-592-9909. That's 888-592-9909. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, buy two bottles of Revive and get one free, plus a collagen sheet mask as a free gift. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman for Revive Multi-Collagen Protein. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's an opportunity for you to pose questions to us. You can send questions or questions at drhoffman.net. One of my favorite broadcasts, because many of our broadcasts are themed broadcasts, sort of narrow focus on one problem or another. On our weekly Q&A with Layla, you never know what we're going to talk about. And so we've got a wide variety of questions. And so, Layla, take it away. Okay. What's our next question?
Reggie writes, Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm a 73-year-old, very active man who's played competitive sports over the years, volleyball for 25-plus years, and for the last 6 years, pickleball two or three times a week. Woohoo! Pickleball is the latest rage, isn't it? It's really something. So, Reggie says, near the end of August, I started to experience latent pain and stiffness following matches at or near the sits bone area. Now, it would usually go away with some stretching. Day-to-day activities are no problem at all, and doing weight-bearing squats and most gym exercises are, again, no problem. But something happened in September where I still cannot do a full single leg horizontal stretch without having some pain. So I'm somewhat reluctant at this point.
So would that be like a hamstring stretch? A hamstring stretch?
Almost. He's feeling it. He's feeling it around a sits bone area.
Right. Yeah.
That's right under the butt. When you sit on the floor, you know, Indian style, you're sitting on those sits bones.
Okay. Okay.
Right?
Okay.
He's kind of getting it there, starting in the butt. Okay. So.
Okay. So go ahead.
Yeah, he's wondering, what's your opinion on this type of injury? Have you experienced it yourself or had patients? Is my age working against me in healing this type of tendon injury with some degree of finality? He's not had any imaging done. His ortho gave him a 4 milligram methylprednisone, you know, for a little bit, for a little while.
Yeah.
But he's still kind of feeling this.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. This is, you know, the tendons are what connect the muscles to the bones, and they tend to be, unlike the muscles, they tend to be a little white colored, which means they're less vascular. And so when damage occurs to them, the repair is less rapid, if at all. And so tendinitis means an inflammation of the tendons, but tendinopathy is more akin to what people experience with tennis elbow. With tennis elbow, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs don't do a lot for it. And by the way, tennis elbow doesn't so much occur right at the elbow. It occurs more on the lateral part of the forearm, so that, you know, when you do curls or when you lift, or even, you know, when you pick up like a cast iron pan or something like that, you're going to get some ache, like a deep aching in your, you know, near your bones in your arm. And not so much at the surface, but sort of a deep thing. And I've had a touch of that. And I think some of that comes from overzealous exercising. Here's the thing, you know, I'm approximately the age of this caller or this listener, and tendons do deteriorate as you age. They just do. They're less compliant. They're less flexible. They're more susceptible to injury. And you can get little micro tears, which cause pain. And the treatment of that is kind of controversial because it doesn't respond to Tylenol, hardly at all. Doesn't respond very much to taking oral non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which long-term aren't good for you. You can do a steroid injection, but steroid injections are counterproductive because what they do is they will actually destroy the strength of your tendons. So, you know, they reduce the inflammation, but actually inflammation is the part where healing can occur. Inflammation encourages blood vessels to bring healing nutrients to tissue. And so repair can occur. So in terms...
Reggie's asking, do you think it's perhaps time for some structured physical therapy?
Of course, absolutely.
He hasn't tried any physical therapy.
Yeah, physical therapy is a correct way to go.
I think physical therapy is a godsend.
Yeah.
I've had that a couple of times in my life, and it's changed everything.
Well, here's the thing, though. Exercise, people get addicted to exercise, and the feel-good endorphins that are released from exercise, and especially when you're older and you're in good shape and you can do everything you want, it's awesome. Until you get an injury. And eventually, you know, if you go hard and, you know, you think you're like a 30-year-old, you're going to have an injury. And that injury is going to be limiting. And then you're going to get depressed. And then you're going to get in a funk. And then, you know, you're going to get out of shape. Yeah. So you really, you know, if you have an injury, pay attention to it. It's not a no pain, no gain situation. I mean, younger people can sometimes push through the pain threshold. But if you're older and you're getting the intimation of pain, stop. And do something else, or don't do, just rest. And so the other techniques that are helpful for tendinopathy, you could try dry needling, which is like a form of acupuncture. You could try acupuncture, but dry needling is like where you insert little tiny needles into the, you know, into the tendon. And you can also, you can do that with ultrasound guidance. So you actually see where, you know, it's going. You can do... PRP, platelet-rich plasma, although that can be expensive. They take some of your blood, spin it down, they re-inject your plasma, which has a healing effect in your body. You can do what's called prolotherapy. Prolotherapy is a type of injection therapy. But, you know, there is no definitive treatment for tendinopathy. And by the way, another form of tendinopathy is plantar fasciitis, which... it kind of has a time course. I had it, you know, from excessive running and potentially from excessive cycling. And I had to lay off. And it had a time course of several months. And now I don't have it. But when, you know, I'd limit my running and ration it. And so that when I start to get intimations of that, I just back off. And I'll go in the pool, which is not stressful to the foot. But, you know, the art of staying active when you're older is to have like a versatile repertoire of activities that, you know, and don't get hung up on like pickleball as your salvation.
Right.
I mean, it can be kind of punishing. It's like a lot of lateral movement and, you know, very... you know, start and stop.
And what happened to Reggie was he was playing as usual, but he had to stop after making a couple of accelerated spurts of speed.
Oh, yeah.
To intercept an opponent, you know, and that can...
Well, this guy's, he's, you know, very good shape. And he's just, in some sense, that may result in him being his own worst enemy because he's very fit. He's able to put stresses on his muscles, but at the same time, the tendons can't support that degree of force.
Yeah.
Okay. So regrettably, it does involve some adaptation. And, you know, a physical therapist can also point out what to do and what not to do for this. You know, they can instruct you like, oh, do this type of exercise you know, maybe work on the opposing muscles and not on, you know, constantly stressing that right. particular muscle group that where there's an insertion into the bone with the tendon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And consider physical therapy if you haven't done that already. Reggie, again, Dr. Hoffman, he hasn't had any imaging studies either.
Yeah, I think imaging studies can sometimes pinpoint the problem, but then, you know, what do? I mean, if this occurred to a baseball player, they'd immediately get an MRI. You know, why? Yeah. Because they're making millions of dollars and they want to, you know, subject them to all the latest, greatest therapies. But, you know, hey, in baseball, these are young guys in their 20s and at most in their 30s, and they go on the IL and they rest them very, very thoroughly before they allow them to return because they're like prize thoroughbreds. They're making an investment in these guys.
And part of them, what is IL?
The injured reserve or the injured list. Oh. Yep.
Okay.
Right.
Like, what's that acronym? I haven't heard that.
Yep.
But I'm not a baseball person either, so I probably wouldn't hear. Okay. Okay. Is that solely in professional sports or something? Or is it?
Well, I think that we should take a lesson from professional sports, especially as we're older.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I think the trick is to you really listen to your pain and not push past it. And I think there's a tendency for fit, active seniors, yours truly included, to push ourselves a little past our limitations and get into an injury syndrome or overtraining syndrome sometimes too, because that sets you up for injuries too.
Reggie, best of luck to you.
Yeah. Right. And let us know how it turns out because, you know.
Yeah, let us know how you're doing.
I mean, but this is part of, you know, your adaptation to your 70s and 80s is that, you know, maybe a little bit of a different style of physical activity.
Now.
Okay, I think this is a good time.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
It's pause for a message from one of our sponsors.
Not that it isn't always a good time to hear from one of our good sponsors, but so listen up, here goes.
You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com.
Thanks for listening, and thank you very much for supporting our sponsors, because, of course, it is through their generous underwriting that we can put on these podcasts to you and, you know, feature them on our website and spread the word about intelligent medicine. So now what's next? Okay.
From Maureen, dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, a 79-year-old female relative of mine has hyperparathyroidism and is having surgery for this soon. She has high calcium and osteoporosis, which are among the symptoms of hyperparathyroidism.
Mm-hmm.
What would your approach be after surgery regarding calcium, vitamin D, etc.? I've heard you still have to be a little careful with calcium even after surgery. Is this true? What is your recommendations
for,
you know, thereafter?
So hyperparathyroidism is a condition where the parathyroid glands, which are sitting on top of your thyroid off to there, I think there are four of them, two that on each side, there are two of them, which govern calcium metabolism through something called PTH, parathyroid hormone. And the release of PTH causes increased intestinal absorption of calcium, but it also looks to find calcium in your bone
So the result is that you leach calcium from your bone and it appears in your bloodstream. And instead of a nice normal calcium of around 9, you can have a calcium of, 10.9 or 11.5 or even as high as 12 or 13, which is hypercalcemia, which can cause problems like, there's an acronym for it. Bone stones, moans, and groans. So bones, osteoporosis, psychic moans, psychiatric symptoms, you can actually get kind of bent out of shape mentally from high calcium, stones in your kidneys, and groans, which would be, intestinal, I think, pain.
Well, I imagine even post-surgery, vitamin D levels would still have to be checked.
Yeah, I don't know if it has so much to do with vitamin D. I think, so once you get, usually it's just one of the parathyroid glands that's implicated. So they do studies to find out which one is secreting too much BTH, and then they remove it through very delicate surgery. And then your calcium levels should return to normal because you're not secreting BTH. Here's the thing about calcium. It's not so much how much calcium you consume, because the fact is that the calcium in your bloodstream, you only absorb about 1/7 the calcium that you consume in your diet. So that's one of the reasons why high-dose calcium kind of fails to stave off osteoporosis, because, all that extra calcium just kind of goes out. You don't absorb it that much, unless you're under the influence of parathyroid hormone, where you absorb it more avidly. So I don't think calcium consumption is that much of a concern. You get your calcium checked, okay? They're going to really zero in on your calcium. Not only are they going to look at your calcium, they're going to look at a very precise measurement of calcium called ionized calcium, because your blood calcium has something to do with also levels of carrier molecules like albumin. So if you have a low albumin, that has, it affects your calcium levels.
Calcium levels, right. Okay.
So anyway, I don't think there's a strong prohibition on taking a moderate calcium supplement after this. It's not going to make that much difference, because if your calcium is still high after the surgery, it means the surgery wasn't successful. It means that they didn't get all of the parathyroid gland or another parathyroid gland that they didn't take care of in the surgery is secreting PTH, and they got to go back in there and fix that. So it's not so much the calcium that you consume. It has to do with the PTH that's secreted by a off-to-the-races parathyroid gland. That's my opinion anyway. Yeah. But if anybody is like an endocrinologist, because endocrinologists deal with this kind of stuff, and they want to say something about calcium consumption and hyperparathyroidism, we'll welcome your input, okay? But that's my impression from learning about this condition and the nutritional elements to it. It's less about nutrition than it is about fixing your parathyroid gland.
Yeah. Maureen, thank you for your question. Best of luck to your relative.
All right.
Gary writes us, I just happened upon an outfit called Human Longevity, and they're promoting something called whole body MRI. Now, he's asking, wonder if you have any opinion about this. There are several outfits that are, promoting whole body MRI. This is just one of them.
Yeah.
What do you think of this?
I think it's
like a direct to consumer thing.
Yeah. I think it's the biggest hype in the world, actually. And so it's a tantalizing notion that if you could look at every millimeter of your body and see what's going on there, to see if there's, say, cancers developing, or if there's some atherosclerosis developing, that you could improve your outcome, that you could save your life, in effect, that you could discover something early which could be treated and which could alter your outcome. And the name of this thing is longevity, right? A longevity program, some kind of a longevity pitch. Radiologists, responsible radiologists, except for the ones that profit off these kinds of consumer offerings, are unanimous in deploring screening MRIs because they're expensive, number one. But, you know, some people, price is no object. Like, hey, I got the money. I want the best possible medical care. Okay, fine. We don't have to do it as a national policy. We can just do it for rich people. But the problem is that you're more likely to come up with a false positive that is A, alarming, B, sends you on a wild goose chase that is expensive and potentially invasive and harmful. And oh, by the way, it'd be one thing if we could cure everything that we find, but we're at a state in medicine now where a fair amount of what we can detect, it will make no difference to the outcome.
Yeah.
So now, if you have some indication that you might have cancer, it might be reasonable to go on a scavenger hunt to look for the cancer. You know, if you're losing weight, you feel devitalized, you have no idea what's going on, like, okay, get screened from stem to stern, because something might be causing that, you know? However, the whole body MRI is, I think, a real, it's a real false promise at best.
And then my question is, as a follow-up, how often do you get this whole body MRI?
Every year? Every 6 months?
To be really...
For years?
To be really sure, get it every month. Every month.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Wow. This... Could you imagine?
Yeah. So don't get it to begin with. This must have been 25 years ago, because this is not new. I was offered... I don't know, maybe it might have been 30 years ago when MRIs were kind of new and novel. There was a potential sponsor for my radio show. I was working for the radio station then. And they said, this is like, they got a lot of money. They want to, you know, have you endorse this. And in addition, they will give you a free whole body MRI. Now, how can you turn that down? That's like whatever, $1,200 value, even in those days. And I said, no, I really don't want to know. And I especially don't want to know what's going on in my brain. They do not want to see what my brain looks like. Thank you very much. Because the shock value of that is not worth it.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's akin to opening up a box of walnuts
or
something.
It is. It is a Pandora's box.
If you're looking for trouble, you're going to find it.
Yes.
If you feel like you said, Dr. Hoffman, if you feel devitalized or something is wrong, you know something is wrong, pay attention to that. Then go get it checked out.
Absolutely.
I mean, any departure from your normal level of health deserves a checkup, starting with a blood test and urine test, you know, the routine stuff, and then maybe, you know, potentially some imaging, especially if there's pain or if there's digestive symptoms, you know, maybe colonoscopy, you know, things like along those lines. And eventually, you know, MRIs and CT scans are used to rule out abdominal malignancies, right? Which is where most of the malignancies occur. But, you know, if you have like brain changes, you know, dizziness, lightheadedness, you know, vertigo, maybe get an MRI because it could be a sign of something going on there.
Amen.
But just a routine screen, no.
No, right.
Garrett, thank you for your question.
Best of health to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, we've got a question from Michael. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. What is your view regarding that various forms of colitis can be caused by dysfunction, being open or closed block of the ileocecal valve?
Mm-hmm. That's a concept that is familiar to chiropractic. And there are many patients who obtain relief from irritable bowel syndrome by virtue of an adjustment, you know, where I've seen it done where the chiropractor, or in some cases, a osteopathic physician, a DO, will go in and deeply palpate, especially on the right lower abdomen, and find the ileocecal valve, which is in spasm, and use some gentle release techniques to resolve that and release it. So that's part and parcel of various manipulative therapies that, you know, and I think it can work. I think it's got some potential. Doesn't work always. I mean, it could alleviate some sort of problem that's mediated by spasm, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it won't change your microbiome necessarily. It won't, you know, alter your reaction to foods,
exactly.
Which I think may be other important factors when it comes to your GI health.
And it mostly, most types of colitis are greatly remedied by going on an elimination diet, whether it's a candida diet, whether it's low FODMAPs, whether it's a specific carbohydrate diet, or even a carnivore diet for really intractable cases, that could be something to do as well. So these are all avenues to explore, Michael.
Yep.
And especially like with, you know, a qualified practitioner to guide you in all of that. So, and I think a lot of people make the mistake of taking just supplements without making any changes in diet. Oh, let me take some more curcumin or boswellia to tamp down. Let me do this. But you're still going to eat that donut or something.
Yeah, deal.
And Michael, we're not talking about you eating a donut. We're talking to anyone else out there, you know, because we know Michael.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's you have to think about not putting apple juice in your car's gas tank before you start tinkering under the hood to see what holes you can clean to make your car run better. You need to stop putting the bad stuff into the gas tank first. You have to decide the quality of fuel.
Yep. First things first.
Or should I say, the type of battery? I don't even know where I'm going with that.
It's a mixed metaphor. Let's put it that way.
Fries. Oh my gosh. But Michael, thank you for your very thoughtful question. We like hearing from you.
Indeed.
All right. Let's see here. We've got a question from Kelly. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. A couple of questions on blood pressure that I hope you can answer for me. Why does a person's blood pressure go up while sitting for a short period of time, say a half hour? And the second one is, why would a person's blood pressure drop after eating a meal? And does that mean that a person could eat several small meals per day to control their blood pressure like that, to keep it low if it's dropping after a meal?
Well, you know, that's kind of interesting. You know, did she ask why does blood pressure go up generally over time? Is that part of the question? Okay, she's not even concerned with it.
Not generally.
Let me speak to that though. Generally, blood pressure increases with age because of increased resistance of your vasculature. You know, you have miles and miles and miles of tiny pipes, and there literally is something called hardening the arteries. And they may not literally harden, they might become less flexible because collagen changes in the blood vessels over time, but also the tone of the autonomic nervous system becomes less supple to adjust for circumstances. And also just the effects of insulin resistance will impact blood pressure. So insulin resistance, when you're overweight, you know, high triglycerides, when you have elevated hemoglobin A1C, it affects there's a path by which poor response to sugar ultimately hits your blood vessels. And, you know, there's a multitude of factors, you know, aging kidneys and so on. All right. She's not even asking that. So why does blood pressure go down when you sit, up when you sit?
No,
up when you're sitting for a short period of time, like 30 minutes, and why does a person's blood pressure drop after eating a meal?
Yeah, I think that is not a general reaction to sitting. I think that when people have pretty balanced blood pressure, blood pressure tends to go down when you're sedentary, and it goes up when you're active, when you're exercising. So I don't know, that sounds like a paradoxical reaction, blood pressure going up when you sit. So I don't know, maybe, you know, after the show, I can look at this phenomenon and see if it's for real. But I would say that that is kind of the opposite of what happens, is that at rest, blood pressure goes down. That's one of the reasons why you get your blood pressure checked when you're sitting, right? Hopefully with your arm at heart level on a flat table where you're not doing anything else.
Where you're not holding up the weight of your own arm, because that could actually cause the blood pressure to go up. And the medical assistant is not asking you questions that you're answering while they're actively taking your blood pressure, because that could also cause your blood pressure to go up. And the fact that you need to empty your bladder before you have your blood pressure checked it up. Now, question, Dr. Hoppen, with regard to blood pressure dropping after a meal, does anything have to do with the blood circulation flowing more towards the stomach?
That's what I would say. That's what I would say, is that there's a sort of a circulatory steel towards your digestive organs, which can cause your blood pressure to... So that's part of what happens, but also... Eating is a parasympathetic activity, right? So typically in a parasympathetic state, it's a rest and digest state. So you could actually induce a parasympathetic response by eating, which is one of the reasons why people, you know, sit and eat. It's relaxing, you know, so it's a, you know, it's a response to stress, you know, people eat. And to get into a parasympathetic stress, instead of doing alternate nostril breathing or meditation, they'll eat. You know, so yeah, that is consistent, that blood pressure will generally go down when you're eating. Yeah, that can make sense.
Yeah.
Kelly, thank you for that question. Very interesting.
I think that's about all the time that we have allocated for questions today, but we may have a couple more in the mailbox to start us off with next week, but we want to continually replenish our inbox. So please send questions to questions@drhoffman.net, and we'll take those questions up next week. How's that sound, Layla?
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate your questions. So remember, questions@drhoffman.net is your destination for questions.
Thank you, Layla. Have yourself a great week, and we'll be back next week. Of course, listen throughout the week to our great podcast. We've had some great interviews. And you'll enjoy them if you subscribe to our podcast, for your favorite podcast dispenser, whether it's Apple Podcasts or any of the others that provide access to our podcast, or just simply go to drhoffman.com and download our podcast directly from our website under the drop-down menu that says Listen. And, of course, you can listen to our weekend show, which is live on Saturdays, but which... eventually becomes podcast on Mondays. So that way you won't miss it.
Thanks everybody.
I'm Dr. Ralph Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.
This is Layla Mudin, registered dietitian nutritionist. I maintain a private practice and see patients regularly. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone and telehealth consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.